Good evening, it's Mark Hendrickson.
Good evening.
Hi, Dr. Hendrickson.
Hi. Oh.
When the person logged in as Josh, is that Josh Rubenstein or Josh Rubin?
It's Rubenstein.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Dr. Karamati.
Hey, Chris.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing this evening?
Good, good.
Good.
It's Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Anybody there?
We're here.
Hello.
That Dr. Flanagan, I hear.
Yep.
How are
Good
you?
afternoon. Good.
Good.
Melissa, can you hear me?
I can.
It's Dr. Gatto.
For the people that are joining us via phone, can you just give me a quick roll call so I get you for attendance.
Dr. Gatto.
Flanagan.
Hello. I got you too.
Kristen,
David
he's
Miller.
here.
I heard David Miller, Kristen.
Stephanie Levin.
You have Mark Hendrickson.
All right, I got everybody so far.
Yep, Dr. Sackman, Dr. Rubin just joined.
Charlie
Dr. Fenny.
James Benazer.
Hi, Dr. Manazer.
Hello.
Why don't we just wait maybe one more minute or so here before we get started?
Brittany just joined.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Lynn.
Hi, Dr.
Hi
Lynn.
there. I'll mute myself right now.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started here. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. Milton won't be on this call. So I will quickly or briefly go over the things that he wanted to remind everybody. We do have some upcoming holidays coming up, both Memorial Day and 4th of July. And if as we kind of enter into the summer months, if you are planning on taking any time off, Please do make that communication with your regional managers so that we can make appropriate coverage, as we've kind of talked about in the past, the importance of why, you know, there should be continuity of care for the patients, and also in terms of the facility standpoint. So please, if you are planning to take some time off, you know, please make that communication. I only have a couple things on my agenda to go over. Did submit a biologics policy to everybody last week. That was really just to kind of standardize the process, but more so to kind of standardize the documentation. you know, we are noticing that some elements are repeatedly being missed on the documentation, and it is something that's really going to be important to make sure that everybody does, you know, thoroughly review their notes to make sure that, you know, all of those elements are included. You know, certainly encourage everybody to use the biologics. You know, it really can help your patients, especially those patients that meet the clinical criteria. But what we're going to soon see is that, you know, these notes are going to be audited more frequently as time goes on, especially given some of the current situations that have been publicized out there, you know, for everybody to see. So please, you know, make sure you are having those things checked off. You know, we provided you with some tools to help help remind you of those criteria that need to be in the notes. So, you know, we'll be continuing to work with
food education. I can't figure out how to get this going.
And oh, Jenna, yeah. About those criteria. But if there's any questions, please let us know.
It was good.
Dr. Lynn, I think your phone might have been unmuted there. All right. Any questions about any of those things? All right. Lastly, as you all know, we sent out a little biologics quiz last week as well, or 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. I just kind of want to go over some of the more commonly missed questions, just so that everybody has kind of a better understanding as to what we were looking for. So the first question is, which of the following patient comorbidities would not typically be a contraindication for the use of an amniotic membrane graft? And the choices are active systemic infection, known allergy to components of the amniotic membrane, uncontrolled diabetes with hemoglobin A1C greater than 10, or stable, well-controlled hypertension. And so the correct answer for this is stable, well-controlled hypertension. You know, all of the other factors or all the other things mentioned are reasons not to graft. Which of the following mechanisms of action is most attributed to the therapeutic benefit of amniotic membrane grafts in chronic wound healing? And the choices were direct antimicrobial activity, provision of a structural scaffold for cellular migration and growth, induction of a robust inflammatory response, or inhibition of fibroblast proliferation to prevent scarring. Now, a lot of people chose induction of a robust inflammatory response. We're not really looking for an inflammatory response as we are, you know, restarting the healing process. And with those amniotic membranes, what you're doing is introducing those growth factors into the wound, directly into the wound. And so what you're trying to do is providing that scaffold for cellular migration and growth. You know, those growth factors are supposed to attract the appropriate cells to kind of get that wound healing regenerated. So that's why that is the better answer there. Next question, when considering an amniotic membrane graft for venous leg ulcer, what is an essential component of the overall management plan? Choices were application of a high potency topical corticosteroid, consistent and appropriate compression therapy, frequent dressing changes, systemic antifungal medication. And the appropriate choice here was consistent and appropriate compression therapy. Again, remember, we do have to optimize those medical issues, those comorbidities. And with venous disease, of course, compression is you know, the mainstay, not only for healing, but also for recurrence. So that is why that is the correct choice in that question. Which of the following laboratory tests is least likely to be routinely required specifically for the consideration of an amniotic membrane graft? Hemoglobin A1C, albumin levels, a CBC, or rheumatoid factor? And in this case, it is rheumatoid factor. The others really, again, are making sure that you have good nutrition, well-controlled diabetes, and no signs for infection. And so those that's why the rheumatoid factor is the incorrect choice there. In which of the following clinical scenarios would an amniotic membrane graft be least appropriate as a first-line treatment? Choice A, a superficial partial thickness burn, chronic pressure ulcer with granulation tissue but stalled healing, a surgically debrided full-thickness wound with exposed subcutaneous tissue, or an infected surgical site requiring drainage and antibiotics. And the incorrect answer there, or I should say the correct answer there, is an infected surgical site. Any sort of active infection needs to be cleared before you can begin amniotic treatment. So that's why that's not an appropriate candidate there. How does the application of an amniotic membrane graft typically impact wound exudate levels? A, it significantly increases exudate production. B, it helps to modulate and often reduce excessive exudate. C, it has no significant impact. Or D, it leads to a rapid cessation of all wound drainage. And the answer in this case is that it actually does help to modulate and reduce the excessive exudate. Let's see here, the next question. A chronic wound treated with an amniotic membrane graft shows initial signs of granulation tissue formation at 2 weeks, but then plateaus. Which of the following interventions would be the most appropriate next step before considering the graft a failure? A, application of a different type of amniotic membrane product. B, initiation of systemic antibiotics to address potential subclinical infection. C, repeat sharp debridement to remove any non-viable tissue or bioburden. D, discontinuation of the graft and return to previous standard wound care. And in this case, repeat sharp debridement is going to be the modality of choice because you're probably dealing with some biofilm. If you've got a stalled wound, more often than not, that's kind of the indolent reason for that wound stalling. And so, you know, doing perhaps a little bit more aggressive sharp debridement, ensuring that biofilm is adequately removed can kind of help the circumstance. Two more questions here. In the management of a chronic arterial ulcer with an ABI of 0.6, what is the most critical adjunct therapy to optimize the potential benefits of an amniotic membrane graft? Choices were intermittent pneumatic compression therapy, topical application of a vasodilator cream, aggressive pain management with opioids, or addressing the underlying vascular insufficiency through revascularization if feasible. And this case is the answer is D, addressing the underlying vascular insufficiency. Again, this comes back to optimizing comorbidities. In this case, the patient does have vascular ischemia with an ABI of 0.6. So that perfusion needs to be improved before you can consider them an appropriate candidate for the biologics. You know, using a vasodilator with that significant of a ischemia is not really going to be all that effective. And finally, which of the following lab findings would raise the greatest concern regarding potential for successful healing with an amniotic membrane graft? A slightly elevated ESR, hemoglobin A1C of 8.5, serum albumin level of 2.8, or a negative wound culture obtained prior to graft application. And in this case, the choice is a serum albumin of 2.8. Generally, you want to have at least an albumin of about 3. You know, a slightly elevated ESR is not really going to be that specific. It could be elevated for a number of reasons. Hemoglobin A1C of 8.5, although it's not really the best, the CMS guidelines state that the hemoglobin A1C should be less than 12. So that meets, and certainly a negative wound culture, you know, would help support the fact that there should not really be any active infection. So those are some of the more commonly missed questions. I will certainly pause here if anybody would like some additional information or have any questions about any of those or would like to kind of review any of those questions again. All right. If there are no other questions about that, Melissa, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Okay, perfect. So I have an update with this elusive new APRIMA form that we've been talking about for months. We're at a point where APRIMA is actually completing a hot fix in the PA database, so we can trial it out and make sure it prints correctly. If everything goes well, we'll be rolling it out starting in Ohio and then, you know, to each other state. So, and then shortly thereafter, we are going to be building in a biologics template for you guys to use so you don't have to copy and paste any information. We are moving to a different company to submit MIPS. We used to use Reporting MD. Now we're going to use a company, it's called Quantition. They have great dashboards. I'll actually be able to pull monthly reports on provider compliance and let you know if you're, you know, really strong in one area and maybe you need some assistance in another area. That'll be right at our fingertips. Continue to gather your CAD meds, your antiplatelets, anticoagulants, your ACE and ARBs. Complete your social drivers with a yes. If you put no, it makes it seem like the facility is not providing these like housing, medical care, basic needs to the residents. Complete all your advanced care plans. Make sure you're continuing to enter your appropriate diagnoses for any new patients. And just as a reminder, skin sweeps must have all relevant MIPS information because these are billable visits. The good thing is we have Michaelin at our corporate office assisting with skin sweep notes, and she is, you know, assisting with some of the MIPS process to make it a little easier transition for the skin sweep notes, because they can be, you know, 50 to 150 patients that you're seeing. So that's just my update for today. And that's all I have.
Melissa, I have a question.
Sure.
Would it be possible to get a list of all the meds that you are looking for?
Yes.
Because, you know, I think almost all these meds were developed after I graduated medical school.
Oh, now come on.
I'm serious.
But yes, I can certainly send that out. That's not a problem. Anyone else that would like a specific list of medications you should be on the lookout for, either just shoot me a text or email me, and I'll make sure everyone gets what they need.
One other thing I've noticed, which may not be totally true, but all the ACE inhibitors have PRIL, P-R-I-L, in its name, and all the ARBs have Sartan, S-A-R-T-A-N, in its name. And I don't know if that will end up helping a lot at all or no, but I noticed that.
You know, I have a question, like, for the skin sweeps. I mean, like a couple of the facilities that I do them for, it's, you know, closer to like 200 people. I mean, I don't think there's a possibility of getting that done handily. And
well,
I think.
Go ahead.
Well, I found out from one facility that they do have a face sheet that can come with the medication list. Would there be any way of arranging that?
Well, the nice thing is when Michaelin goes through your skin sweep notes, Michaelin is actually providing on that Excel sheet, that patient Excel sheet. She's just starring and letting you know what patients need medications for the CAD diagnosis. So you don't have to go through every single patient. She's providing you with that feedback. So out of 200 patients, you might need 10 patients with meds.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit unlikely, but that's just my patience, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's we're doing our, Stephanie Lovin and I tried to come up with a way to make things easier for all the providers, knowing how many patients are seen during a skin sweep. So anything that we can do on our end, like if they have a dementia diagnosis, we can mark that off in APRIMA for you. If you know, we know everybody has an advanced care plan, so we can help you with those. But it's the social drivers and the meds that we really need your assistance with.
Okay. And one other simple question. Like when you have an ARB, are you supposed to put in, like this is Losartan, 50 milligrams daily. You just put in Losartan, 50 milligrams daily, ARB?
No, you just, like the just add it to the medication section of the history tab. Like you would enter your aspirin, you know, 81 milligrams, whatever the resident is on. You would just enter it in that section. And then we're able to pull that data out for reporting purposes. As long as you're entering all your meds in the medication section, we can pull those meds straight out of a Prima.
Yeah. The one problem with that is like when I click on, like just now I clicked on medication and it didn't show the Lipitor or the Enoxaprin. Then I clicked on the social history above and then clicked on medication history and it showed them. And that's why I've been putting, I don't know if anyone else is doing this, but that's why I've been putting Enoxaprin and Lipitor in that box under history.
Correct. Some providers are putting the information in that box. However, we have to manually go through and look at each chart to see if the information's there. A Prima doesn't pull that because it's not a regulated field.
My point is a Prima doesn't always show that to me. But like what I've done, like what I just said, I put it in and like just now I clicked on it on William McCullough and it didn't show it. So what I've learned is if I click on something else in that column and then go back, like I just clicked on medication history, and then it didn't show it. So then I clicked on social history, and I went back and clicked on medication history, and it actually showed the Enoxaprin and the Lipitor. So, I mean, I do this to
document. That tab just takes sometimes very long to populate. But it'll be there even if you just stayed on meds.
Correct.
Yeah, but the problem is if you're looking, if you're looking and it's not there, that doesn't help.
Well, and you Dr. put
it, yeah, well, I mean, you have to wait the 10 seconds for it to populate.
What I can do,
it's
Dr. Hendrickson,
way too long, but it does eventually populate.
Yes, but just to make sure that you're not having any issues that perhaps the rest of us aren't seeing, I am certainly happy to do a one-on-one Zoom with you. I think we can set that up.
And like 30 minutes ago, I'm at home on the wireless. My laptop crashed because it says there was no wireless. And on this laptop, there was no wireless. But on my wife's laptop, the MacBook, there was the wireless. And everything else in the house is using the wireless. And I had to shut down everything and restart. Because it showed no wireless on mine. But then when I restarted it, the wireless came back.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do like an individual call with you, Dr. Hendrickson, so we can figure out what's going on with your laptop.
Sure.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions, comments, concerns that we can stay with?
Hey, it's Jason Sackman. I don't know if this is just like an Illinois issue or a Jason issue, but there's like a handful of facilities that like they have to individually add every single patient that I ever get, and it never happens on sweeps, which I understand we're addressing sweeps. But when we're setting up PCC access, I mean, is it possible to just like have them do it, you know, kind of mirror the access that the schedulers and whoever else at the central office has? Because then I just have access to everybody in the facility. We don't have to worry about, you know, what happens when, you know, I do see a patient or two in a skin sweep and they're not part of my, you know, list of patients.
Yes, we can address PCC access for all residents. Most states are like that. I'm not sure why you have limited access.
I mean, I think that would really help as far as like not having to like get them on the audit and then go back and then, you know what I mean? I'll just get them done. I don't care how long it takes, you know, as long as we just do them when you see the patient, then great.
Dr. Sackman, is that for all of your buildings or?
No, there are some that I just have everybody. And then there's a lot that I don't have anybody. And then it's like, it also slows down the process. Like when you're first seeing a new patient that's newly admitted, they're never on the list. You know, I think that would be super helpful for me.
Basically. You can email me a list of the facilities that you need full access for. I'll work on that for you.
Okay, yeah. And then I think I should be getting a lot of new facilities over the summer. I don't want to make this a personal issue. I was just saying maybe it's helpful for everybody, maybe not. But yeah, as we set up new ones, let's do that. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, is there anything else I can help you with tonight? Okay, well, don't be afraid to reach out. Schedule some time with me if there's still something that's going on as far as your MIPS tab or if you're having some computer issues. I'll let Deanna and I know so we can work through those with you. I appreciate your hard work and your dedication to the residents. That's all I have.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great evening.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good night.